you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
I'm Austin Cross. Join me for LAist's new live event series with the James Beard Foundation. We Are Where We Eat will go behind the scenes of LA restaurants. The kickoff event is May 22nd. Tickets at LAist.com/events.
It's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Great to have you with us. Coming up a little bit later this hour, why it's so challenging for many of us to be out in public again, particularly unmasked, even with very low COVID rates currently, very few comparatively hospitalizations. Why does it still feel very weird and we feel so vulnerable? We're going to talk with a psychology expert who joined us to talk about how brain wiring is playing a role. We're so adaptable. We did so well to adapt to being locked down in many cases. But now, of course, it's going to take some time to adjust to the outside world. We'll find out how that actually is a function of how our brains are wired. But first, Dr. Kimberly Schreiner with us, Huntington Hospital. Dr. Schreiner, great to have you with us. Is this something you're feeling as well? It still feels kind of odd to be out there without a mask?
Absolutely, Larry. I think it's just something we're going to have to adjust to, although we also are going to have to pay attention to and perhaps continuing to wear a mask for a while we have some problems circulating here.
But retraining our brains doesn't necessarily happen overnight. Let's talk, first of all, as we've been doing with all of our experts each day, the good news of where we continue to stand. We know that the Delta variant is becoming a higher percentage of cases, but overall cases are still low.
They are indeed, Larry, and that's great news. I think, again, this is the durability of the vaccination program that we've had here in L.A. County and throughout California. And so we're really pleased with that. We are beginning to see a slight uptick in the number of cases. Those cases are being looked at very carefully. They seem to be occurring predominantly in unvaccinated individuals. And so we're going to watch that really carefully over the next few weeks and months as we see more of this Delta variant circulating.
So we have different mask recommendations. The World Health Organization recommending that everybody mask indoors, vaccinated or not. Los Angeles County coming with a similar recommendation, but the state of California not issuing that recommendation. Given that Los Angeles County still has these low rates of COVID that we're talking about, why do you think LA County is taking this position differently than the state of California Department of Public Health?
Well, I don't know the exact details, but I know that Dr. Ferrer really feels that with the advent of the Delta variant, that we need to be very cautious. And I think many public health individuals and many infectious disease physicians, including myself, felt that the initial unmasking that the CDC recommended was confusing. And the problem is that when you go into an indoor area and people are not wearing masks, you don't know who's unvaccinated and who's vaccinated. And unfortunately, many people who are unvaccinated will also not be wearing masks and could potentially continue to spread COVID. Remember that 5% of individuals in the original Pfizer and Moderna studies contracted COVID, so you still can contract COVID even if you've been fully vaccinated. And some individuals, as we are learning, do not respond very well to the vaccines. Of course, we're also entering the fall where we're sort of beginning to see 6 months, 7 months, 8 months after we've all been vaccinated and how well the vaccines are holding up. Now, a recent study was very encouraging that there does seem to be some very robust maintenance of immunity in individuals who have good immune systems. But in elderly people or in people that are taking immunosuppressive drugs, they may not be quite as well protected. So being in an unmasked environment indoors with people that could potentially be spreading this Delta variant could be very risky.
I ask this not to undermine your advice or what you've just said, but I'm sure there are listeners who are thinking, well, but back when the 5% breakthrough cases happened during the clinical trial, there was more COVID that was out in places where people lived who were part of the trial. At least here in California, there's significantly fewer cases. We're not seeing many serious cases of COVID, serious symptoms in people that are fully vaccinated. There have been a handful of deaths, and some people have been hospitalized, but it's very rare. So, I think many of our listeners are thinking, well, given the comparative risk, why do vaccinated people still need to mask, or should they mask indoors?
Well, it's a very good point and a very valid one, Larry. The couple things to remember. The first is that when the trials were done, we didn't have these really significant variants, the alpha variant, B117, and the certainly this variant, the delta variant, which is highly infectious, very, very infectious, much so, more so than any of the viruses we've dealt with so far, variations of the virus that we've dealt with so far. So there's that factor. You're absolutely right. With a very low incidence of disease, the likelihood that you're going to encounter somebody who is infected is much, much smaller. And that's the great news. I mean, we've done a great job between, unfortunately, people who've had COVID, but also balanced with the people that have been vaccinated to really drive that curve down, and that's terrific. The issue really is, as we move forward, again, as we see more of the Delta becoming the dominant variant as it's circulating, and more individuals who may not have responded to the vaccine, that we need to protect them and have some concern. And the other really important factor here is that since we don't know who's vaccinated and who's not, I think that there's some folks that feel that if we just have a mandatory or a recommended use of vaccines in indoor areas, then you don't have to know, are you vaccinated or not? And that way it sort of takes the sting out of asking people, or awkward moments, or protecting people who maybe would choose not to declare what their vaccination status is. So I do think that there's some advantages to doing that. I continue to wear a mask when I move in a grocery store or when I'm inside a store because I think that we just still don't know very much about this virus and where it's going to go over the next few months.
I have to say it was so freeing. I was on a week-long road trip with my wife through the Southwest, and when we're in northern Arizona and New Mexico and into southern Colorado, people just were not wearing masks. And it was very freeing to be in a world that felt like what it was like before there was the pandemic and COVID-19. And then as we're driving back on the Navajo reservation, on the Navajo Nation land, they have a very strict masking policy because, as you know, they've been devastated by COVID-19 and still take that very seriously for people to mask. And then it was like being, back in what we had all been experiencing for over a year. And I think, that sort of lure of the freedom, Dr. Schreiner, that's a very strong pull.
It is, Larry, and I share your appreciation for that because it does feel good. It feels good to be with friends and family again, to be having some sense of normalcy in terms of our activities. But we aren't. This pandemic is far from over, and I sort of don't want to be the Chicken Little here, but it really is an ongoing problem. Wherever the virus is replicating, whether it's in the United States or in India or in sub-Saharan Africa or in South America, that gives the virus an opportunity to develop even more mutations. And what we're really terrified of is, could the virus transform enough that it would evade our current vaccines? Now, we do have tools. We know what to do with that. We know what we can go right back into what we had to do before. We know how to modify the vaccines to protect us should the virus become a very virulent form. But I think as you're talking about the emotional and mental health impact of what we've experienced and what we're trying to transform into back into a normal life, that would be devastating to have to go backwards. And I think it would be a very difficult thing for people to do, even though we know how to do it emotionally, mm-hmm. even from as a physician, to have to go back to what we experienced in December and January here in Pasadena was horrific. And I think that that's what we're trying to avoid by really, saying, yes, we can celebrate. Yes, we're making some tremendous progress in our own country. We're trying to help the rest of the world, but it's going to take time. Please be patient. And we might have to do it in baby steps.
Yeah, it'd be deflating to say the least. Dr. Kimberly Schreiner, Huntington Hospital in Pasadena, infectious disease specialist with us. And as always, she'll answer your questions at 866-893-KPECC. You can tweet at AirTalk, post on the AirTalk Facebook page, or post on the AirTalk page itself, kpecc.org. David in Venice asking about the relative effectiveness of the various vaccines against the Delta variant, Moderna, says, for example, in a recent study that its mRNA vaccine shows very strong effectiveness against the Delta variant. What do we know about each of them with Delta?
So both of the mRNA vaccines, they're nearly identical in terms of their efficacy, and they're very, very potent. That after the second shot, after the first shot, you have about 33% effectiveness against Delta. After the second shot, 2 weeks later, when you're sort of fully immunized, that goes up to 88%, which is very good for a vaccine. And so that's really going to protect you very well from serious disease, certainly from death, and likely from hospitalization. Johnson & Johnson also, even though that's a one-shot vaccine, that has good efficacy around 66 to 70%. I know there's probably a lot of people out there that receive J&J and they're wondering should they get an mRNA vaccine on top of that. We don't have any data on that right now. And there are some countries that are mixing up the vaccines a little bit. And indeed, that may be a recommendation if it looks like we're falling behind in terms of our protection against Delta. But I think right now, where J&J stands, it's a fully effective vaccine against against the Delta virus. And so for the mRNA vaccines, you have to have both shots. One of the concerns, the reason why Delta kind of got away from the English, is that they spaced out their second shot quite much more than we did here. And so there were lots of people that had a first shot but had not been fully vaccinated, and so they ended up getting Delta, and some of those folks got quite sick. So you really have to have both shots on board for a two-shot system.
That's interesting, because we had talked, months ago, I think, about whether the English approach was actually a better approach in spacing it out, because then more people could get the first dose, and that perhaps that would be better coverage and just delay the second dose. Sounds like you're saying you think that experiment didn't work.
Well, I think, I remember saying that and talking with you about that, and that is true. I mean, in an emergency situation where you've got to vaccinate as many people as possible, as quickly as possible, in the presence of a vaccine shortage, remember that was part of the problem, was there wasn't a lot of vaccine around, then there is some advantage to doing that, except when you have a very strong and wily opponent like SARS-CoV-2, it obviously took advantage of that, so that we didn't know that we were going to have these variants where there would be less immunity after the first shot. So I think that shows how facile the virus is in terms of transforming into a nastier version. And it also speaks to the fact that science changes, that we try something, well, that didn't work too well, or that didn't work as well as we thought it might, or something happened that we couldn't have predicted. And so in science, you have to be nimble, you have to be humble and nimble, and recognize that sometimes your plans don't come out the way they are, because nature will take advantage of a different situation.
Mike in Anaheim says, I'm really skeptical of these mask mandates, not because I'm denying the small risk out there, but because I believe almost everyone caught COVID while wearing a cloth mask. And there's not scientific evidence I'm aware of that shows they control disease. Maybe it's different if everyone wore an N95 or medical grade, but how does a piece of cloth over your face really prevent spread of COVID-19?
Well, Mike, there actually are data that show that cloth masks, although you're absolutely right, they're not nearly as effective as a KN95 or an N95 mask, but there are very good data that show the different types of masking and how effective they are at preventing certain type-size droplets from getting to your nasal mucosa. And so cloth masks, although they are imperfect and not nearly as good as N95s that we wear in the hospital, they are still more effective than being unmasked. And so, especially in the presence of a highly infectious variant of this virus. So, and around the world, cloth masks are some of the only tools that many countries, including Tanzania, where I work a lot of the time, that's the only option they have. They don't have N95s. And so they do protect some. They are imperfect, as you've pointed out. But they are certainly much more protective than wearing nothing at all.
You just mentioned the work that you've done in African countries, and we weren't scheduled to talk about this, but it just made me think, because you're an expert on HIV and AIDS. Do we have any information out of countries with high numbers of people who are living with HIV about how COVID has interrelated, if it has, with those who are HIV positive or might have their immune systems affected by it?
It's interesting information, Larry, that you, and it's a complicated situation. Certainly, South Africa has quite a bit of data on individuals who are uncontrolled HIV. In other words, they're not on good antiretroviral therapy. Their immune systems have not been sort of restored, which we can do fairly easily now with the medications we have available for treating HIV. So in countries where there's a lot of uncontrolled HIV disease and people are very immunosuppressed, they do poorly with COVID. The virus really takes advantage of that, a suppressed immune system. And indeed, it may actually replicate, and this may be one of the concerns that Dr. Fauci, who's also an HIV specialist, had expressed, was that in these type of countries, this is maybe where variants will appear because there'll be a very high viral load for both SARS-CoV-2 and the HIV virus itself is kind of causing the immune system to create this situation where there's more virus. That being said, in our own country, I've seen actually not a lot of severe COVID in my HIV-positive patients who are well-controlled on their meds. Now, whether that's related to the medications, we don't think so. They've not shown to be terribly efficacious against SARS-CoV-2, or it has something to do with being infected with HIV, or the fact that these individuals are very careful and protecting themselves. We don't know, but that's a very interesting question. HIV is a virus that suppresses the immune system. SARS-CoV-2 is a virus that accentuates the immune system. Somewhere in between, there may be some very important answers in both of these diseases.
All right, Dr. Schreiner, thank you so much. We appreciate it, as always, and sure look forward to talking with you again soon. And have a great Independence Day weekend.
You too, Larry. Always a pleasure.
Thanks so much. Dr. Kimberly Schreiner, infectious disease specialist at Huntington Hospital in Pasadena, our neighbor right around the corner from our studios here at KPCC in the Mon Broadcast Center. We have much more to talk about. Another jam-packed day, just like yesterday. I think we had 8 topics yesterday on one program. We've got a lot going today, too. We'll talk next about the psychology of getting back into the world, how our brains are wired, and why it may be a longer transition than we would think. Back in just 90 seconds.
The LAS Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win, and the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAS.com/sweeps.